You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell, you've just been listening to Hot Texas, but Hot Texas Rhythm Man.
Yeah, and we're so excited that you are with us. This is episode 179, and if you tuned in and it seemed like we're a little bit late, well, that's the internet for you, and that's on our end this tonight. We had a little challenge, but here we are, and our guests are ready to come on. Jim, where are we broadcasting from tonight?
Okay. Well, I tell you, we're in Waco, Texas, 1886. The town is celebrating the 50th anniversary of Texas independence. We are in a back alley watching a knife throwing contest. Big knives. They call them Bowie knives. No one has hit the bullseye yet. Wait, there's a last minute entry. An old man with a cane. I think he's the town judge. Whoa, he just hit the bullseye and won the contest.
Speaking of Bowie knives, who's joining us tonight?
Who's joining
us tonight?
Casey Nash.
Yes, here is author Casey Nash joining us. Hello, Casey.
Hello.
We are so happy to have you with us tonight. I hope you can see us okay.
I can.
We're doing this on our phone, and everybody's really little, including us, so we're hoping that you can see us.
Yeah, I can see you fine.
And Casey, where are you joining us from tonight?
I am in South Alabama.
All right. And who else is joining us?
Yes. Scott McCrae.
Hey, there he is. Hello.
Hi, gorgeous. How are you?
We're good. We're so happy to finally be on the air with both of you who've been waiting for us.
I didn't know Casey Nash had such long blonde hair.
Ah! A man of mystery. Well, let's see. Scott McCrae is the author of Ezra Flint, and we have a few of his Ezra Flint books here. And of course, Casey, I didn't show his book yet. Casey, when we brought you on, I apologize. But he writes the Jubal Stone series. And tonight we're going to be talking about his newest one, which you have, because you're going to read from it. So we're going to hold this one up to the camera. Casey, this is such a great book. Jubal Stone, U.S. Marshal. The Blade That Cuts Deep. And we're going to be talking about that in greater length. And Scott, where are you joining us from tonight?
The bar. I'm at the bar. No, I'm in Southern California.
At the bar.
At the bar in Southern California.
That's okay.
Yeah, we wouldn't mind being at the bar in Southern California.
I think we'll be at the bar later too.
Yeah, I think tonight we will be. Well, let's see. Jim, do you want to go ahead and tell our...
Read some bios here?
Yeah, tell our audience a little bit about our guests.
Well, let's do Casey, and then we'll do Scott.
Yeah.
Casey Nash grew up watching Westerns, Gunsmoke, Bonanza, and The Rifleman. After 37 years as a full-time minister, he is now a retired pastor. He started writing Western novels in 2013, and as a full-time writer, he now has over 120 books in print. Casey, a member of the Dusty Saddle publishing team, is addicted to writing stories and entertaining his readers. He likes nothing better than to interact with them. Very good.
And Scott.
Okay, Scott, a member of the Dusty Saddle publishing team of authors also, and the editor for the landmark America 250 series, also joins us tonight for his fourth visit. Scott is a 2024 Western Writers of America Spur Award finalist. The author of 25 and counting Westerns. He has also written novels, short stories, magazine articles, and more, and he's been on TV. All right.
Oh, again, we really thank you for being with us. So let's see, Casey, would you like to just tell us a little bit more about your background, maybe a couple things that we didn't hit on in the bio?
Sure. I grew up in the South, and I grew up around livestock and cattle. So that's just been such a part of my life. And as you mentioned, grew up watching the Western. So I've always just had a fondness for that. And of course, I never imagined being a writer, a Western writer. I didn't grow up aspiring to be, but that just kind of came in 2013. And so it's amazing how, you know, my background growing up, riding horses, showing them, training them, all that kind of stuff filters into my writing today.
Yeah. Yes. And it really does. Everything feels so authentic.
Are you still doing cattle drives in the summertime?
I am. I'm actually headed to Horse Creek, Wyoming, May 1st.
Oh, wow.
I'll be there for a week. And I hope to, as I always do, ride with the wranglers. And I get a lot of riding fodder when I'm on my friend's ranch. He has a 70,000 acre ranch in Horse Creek. And he just kind of gives me free run of it. And the West just comes alive for me out there.
Yeah.
That's a big ranch.
That's a lot of lawn to mow.
Big old mow grass. Big old cattle.
We're all hat and no cattle, just in case anybody's ever wondered. And Scott, you want to share a little something that we didn't hit on in your bio?
Well, I was born at a very early age. and have gotten progressively older. No, so I unlike Casey, I actually always wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be a writer when I was in second grade. And now that I'm well over 50, you could say I'm an overnight success. But even when I was in second grade, so every Friday, the teacher, whose name was Mrs. Trainer, I remember this like it was yesterday, would have us write a short story on Fridays. And I just, that was all I waited for all week. And then she would ask people to get up if they wanted to read them out loud. And my hand was always the first one up. And I never actually, I cannot remember a time when I didn't want to be a writer. It's the only thing I ever wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. So how did you two, you have met besides on the air tonight. How did you, do you remember how you met and when, where and where that was?
Yeah, I was walking down Fifth Avenue and somebody walked up to me and said, "What's the capital of Bolivia?" And Casey, why don't you tell them?
Well, we both are in Dusty Saddles stables, I guess. And so we've had some projects that have overlapped and we've co-written. And so that's how we came together just probably about a year ago. Scott, I can't.
Yeah, give or take. We were just instantly simpatico.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I can understand that. And you both, of course, as you said, with Dusty Saddle Publishing, both writing Westerns. What is it about? Is there something just magical about the Western that just grabs you and just gets you, you know, gets those T's tapping on the keyboard?
Well, for me, it certainly does, because I think it's sort of part of my DNA. As I mentioned, livestock. And I live on a goat farm now. And have horses. And so it's just part of my lifestyle. And I love it. And then growing up watching so many of the Westerns and now being able to put these stories together, it's amazing. I love the West and I love livestock. You know, I said earlier, I'm addicted to riding, but I'm also addicted to animals. Horses, they're my first love.
And Scott, what is it about the Western?
I always loved genre fiction of all kinds. I mean, I love detective stories and spy stories and horror stories. And of all the types of books that I've written, I've liked writing Westerns most of all because of all the genres out there. There's something that's more honest about them than others. I mean, I usually tell people, if you want to write a Western, just take an Old Testament story and put a horse in it. So there's an honesty and depth of emotion in a Western that you don't get from a mystery story, for example,
right.
Usually.
Right. Do you want to ask, Do you want to ask that great question about writing as a hobby or writing as a professional?
That's a professional.
Yeah.
We have way down here, there's hobby writers and professional writers. What's the difference? I guess you make money or you don't, huh?
Well, that's true. For me, it's a couple of words come to my discipline. You know, when I first published the first book I wrote, it was exhilarating. It was amazing and all that kind of stuff. And now it's like that was part and parcel of the process. But then you have to sell the book. You know, writing it is one thing, which I love to do, but then promoting it and selling it is a whole different thing. And so the difference for me, though, in the professional writing is it's a job, but it's still a passion. So I've moved from the hobby part of just writing when I feel like it, print a book every now and then. I write roughly 2 books a month now, sometimes 3. I have written 4 when I'm doing co-writes, and it's just how I roll now. It's just part of me. And of course, my publicist, I laugh here. I'll send the manuscript in. I'm so excited that I finished it and I feel good about it. And he says, "Okay, what's your next title and blurb for the next one?" I'm like, "I just sent this one in, but I'm on it, you know." And it's not long before I'll crank that out and get it to him. So. It's an everyday thing. Scott and I were talking about before we went on air that I think each of us write at least 5,000 words a day.
Wow.
And sometimes I have written up to 13,000. Wow. But you start to get brain dead after that. You know, you're just kind of like a wet dish rag, you know. You can't put words together after that. But no, so you don't write just when you feel like it. You write because you're a writer. And you have deadlines.
Yeah.
You have projects. I have 3 different series going right now. So I'll work on one and I never get, writer's block. I just pivot to another series. So.
Yeah. Scott, what would you say? Is there a difference? What is the difference?
The difference between a professional writer and a hobby writer is that a professional writer can afford inspiration.
Yeah,
because a lot of hobby writers are waiting for inspiration, and professional writers are waiting for the check, and like Casey, you know, being prolific is the name of the game. I think at this point I've written more books than I've read, so
yeah.
All right.
So, but yes, you have to keep out. I was just telling Casey, you know, it's 5,000 words. If that takes me 4 hours. I'm delighted because then I can spend the rest of the day cleaning it up. If it's 8 hours, well, you know, then it's 8 hours, but I do not leave the desk until my 5,000 are done.
Wow. That's discipline. That's discipline, right? Do you want to?
We, you know, both of these books here are about marshals.
Yeah.
In the West. Do you want to comment on marshals a little bit? You know,
marshals.
We always heard that term, but you know, what's their jurisdiction? What authority do they have? And how do they enter? Or what's the difference between a marshal, perhaps, and a sheriff's duties?
Casey,
well, the marshal obviously is a federal agent, and so they usually work under a magistrate, or they serve warrants. Like Jubal, he works under that salty judge, Leon Brewster, who is nicknamed Rooster Brewster. He doesn't really like that name, but he's an older man, but he's a great judge. You know, people love him across Texas. But so Jubal works under him and serves warrants, testifies a lot in court, escorts prisoners, protects judges, and takes all kinds of assignments that are given to him, crosses out of his jurisdiction when he's given authority to do so. A sheriff is more of a county kind of law person. They're actually elected, whereas the marshals are going to be appointed. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the differences. Scott, you may want to add to that.
Well, so I have a rather snarky answer to this question, which is a big surprise to you, I'm sure. Which is that I never really cared, because I always thought of myself, you know, primarily as an entertainer rather than a historian. And if you ask anyone who likes Westerns, you know, what is a marshal, you know, they wouldn't say, well, he's a person who serves writs or warrants. They would say, well, he's the guy who stands against injustice, or he's the man between civilization and non-civilization.
Yeah.
He's an object of vengeance.
Uh-huh.
And it's important, like Casey says, to remember what, you know, historical marshals actually did. But I try to key in more to what does a mythic marshal do, because marshal is a very loaded word. You know, it's judgment, it's vengeance, it's justice, supporting the innocent and protecting them. So, you know, it's a very loaded concept, and I tried to you know, keep it in a sort of mythic realm.
Yep.
We want to ask about the 250 series.
Yes, let's ask about the 250 series. America 250, landmark series. And Scott, I know you have something to do with this series, editor.
And, yes.
We're talking tonight about, let me hold up.
The first book in the series by Casey Nash.
That Jim's going to read from. So he has it over in his corner here.
I have nothing up to do. Just if you needed it, you know.
Yes. So tell us.
So America 250 is a series that I created with publisher Nick Whale at DSP. We were sitting around one day and it dawned on me that nobody in the publishing field was doing anything to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the United States. We thought that this was scandalous, that here it is, you know, 250 years. You would think publishers would be rolling out all kinds of wonderful things, but we did a quick search. We couldn't find anyone doing anything. And Nick said, well, we have so many great, talented people with us. You know, guys like Casey and guys like Mike McCassie and guys like Jeff Crawford and guys like Terrence McCauley. Why aren't we doing a series of books with them? So to inaugurate it, we went with Casey, you know, doing a historical character and his series character. And then, you know, other people are writing about historical characters, you know, original novels. So we have Jeff Crawford doing Tom Horne, and we've had Charles Ray doing Jim Beckworth, and we have Terrence McCauley doing Teddy Roosevelt. And so it's a year-long celebration, a new book every month to celebrate America's 250th anniversary.
And this book, the first book, well, maybe we should take our, you know what? We're going to take a very short break. And then when we come back, we're going to be doing a real in-depth look at Casey Nash's Jubal Stone U.S. Marshal, The Blade That Cuts Deep. But before we do that, we want to say a thank you to our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. They are standing by to assist you if you are a writer. They've created a special offer just for you. And we're going to hear about that. And when we come back, we're going to hear the clip of a song inspired by the life of Jim Bowie. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Authors, welcome home. Every author needs a website, a home base for their brand. Professionally showcase your books and brand with a custom website landing page starting at $369. Bluebookshelf.com. It's a great feeling to be home. Contact the Blue Cottage team today to get started.
Jim Bowie, Jim Bowie, he was a bold adventuring man. Jim Bowie, Jim Bowie, battled for right with a powerful hand. His blade was tempered and so was he, indestructible steel was he. Jim Bowie, Jim Bowie, he was a fighter, a fearless and mighty adventuring man.
We're back.
Welcome back. Ronnie Rue and the Writer. We're talking with Casey Nash and Scott McCrae. And I think that was Jim Bowie, right?
Yes, that was a song. It was actually the theme song to the TV show, which I didn't realize at first, but it was performed by the Prairie Chiefs. And it just felt perfect for tonight. So always fun to put a little bit of music in when you can. Let's see. So, Casey, where and when does this story kind of take place? Tell us a little bit about this setting.
Sure. Well, it is part of a Jubilstone series. So all of those books are in the 1880s, middle 1880s and a little later. And so when I started this process of covering Jim Bowie, and by the way, Bobby, I want to congratulate you for getting his name right. Bowie. And I have to confess, I struggled with that a little bit myself. I'd say it, and I'm like, no, it's Bowie, it's Bowie. But did you know that David Bowie, the singer, he took that name from Bowie?
Oh.
Is what I understand. That's what I've heard. That's what I've read. But anyway, so I don't know. Jim Bowie has always in my mind been an American hero. And so I got to thinking about that. How can I cover his life, but it be a part of Jubilstone? So I had to reach back because, you know, that was about 50 years before. Jubilstone, the time frame is 50 years forward. And so I just kind of did some cameos of Jim Bowie and brought some characters in that talked about him. And, of course, one of them was Derringer Bob. Mm. And he is related to Jim Bowie, but he does not like him. There's a lot of animosity, and there's been years he – didn't even really know him. He just heard about him through family and that kind of thing. So that's sort of how that started with Jim Bowie. And, you know, he's a Texas hero. And so when Bob comes to Waco and he's trashing Jim Bowie, that was serious stuff.
Yeah.
And it drew the fire. And then, you know, from then on, and of course, Derringer Bob was a highwayman, but they didn't know that when he was in Waco, but he killed a man. And then Jubilstone got on his trail.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a bad guy.
Yeah, do you want to? We have to ask.
Yeah, we got to talk about the Bowie knife.
Yeah.
What's that all about?
Well, the Bowie knife, that's interesting. My research and talking to different people that know this and that about that knife, it was Jim Bowie's brother. He actually designed that knife, but there was a blacksmith. I'm trying to remember his name. Jesse Cliff actually forged that knife into existence.
Oh.
And there's different thoughts about how long the knife was. It goes from, you know how stories, they get bigger, but the knife gets bigger. But it went as from anywhere from a 9.5-inch knife to a 12-inch. Well, in my story, Curly Snipes, the blacksmith, he forges a personal knife, a Bowie knife, for Marshall Stone because they are big buddies, they're close friends. He puts an extra inch on it, and he also puts a whirling log, stamps that into it, which means good luck. And so it is a very custom-made knife for Jubal. And, you know, he cherishes it from that day forward and uses it in the story.
Yes, yes.
And so that knife, I'm thinking how it became famous was on the Sandbar fight, which took place somewhere between Natchez, Mississippi and Vidalia. And I went there before I wrote this book, just doing some research. And I thought there was a monument right there on the spot where the fight took place. Well, what I understood after talking to different people is it's no longer there. It may have never been there, but the Mississippi River has changed directions.
Okay.
So you can't say this is where it was, but there was that sandbar fight is replicated in the convention there, a little display. And I went in and took a video of that. And that was pretty cool. But that's where Jim Bowie made that knife famous, in that fight. It was a duel that went bad, and it was a melee. And he got shot and stabbed himself, and then he killed his opponent. And so everybody wanted a knife like that after
that.
Yeah, he was lucky to make it out alive in that thing.
In that
absolutely,
fight.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So one of the characters, sort of the main bad guy, and oh, readers, you'll just love hating him, is Derringer Bob. And he carries two Derringers that we know, and he has names for them. What does he call those guns?
Pete and Repeat.
Pete and Repeat. A little sense of humor Bob has. And he is nasty. He has to be fun to write. Was he fun to write?
He was fun to write. And, you know, Jubal is such a strong character. You have to have a pretty good antagonist, you know, to match him. But and Bob Pinnick, Derringer Bob, he's certainly that guy. He's a vile guy, and he's got a short temper, and he's just been a bully for many years. And so, yeah, he was fun to write. In fact, in one of the scenes, a young reporter finds out he's Derringer Bob, and he wants to cover him, and he asks him for a quote. Well, it just ticked Bob off that the boy was bothering him. And he said, I'll give you a quote. And he actually shot him.
Yeah.
And the boys ran on the ground, on the floor. And Derringer Bob walks over and says, well, was that quote worth it? And ironically, the boy said, yeah, I can tell everybody I was shot by Derringer Bob. You know, yeah. There's a writer for you.
There is some humor in Casey's writing,
yeah,
also.
You know, if there ever was a character that believed in shooting first and asking questions later,
is Derringer Bob.
Two gun Bob.
Casey, if you don't mind, Jim found a passage from the book, and we were just chatting a minute ago because I think this is the time to read it. If you don't mind, he's going to read it aloud.
Ooh, sure.
And it's Jubal Stone, but it's not with Derringer Bob.
Okay.
It's with another
young man.
Guy. Go ahead. Go
Jones
ahead,
is the guy's
go
name.
Ahead and read this quote.
Well, I thought the jargon, the language, the words, you know, in this particular passage were so fun and interesting. I just thought that it meant to be read aloud here. You've got this young guy. He's a young wannabe gunslinger. He's just come into town. He's been checking out Jubal. And Jubal has caught him looking at him, and he's thinking, what's going on? So he's talking to the guy. He says, and the young gunslinger says, what do you want with me, Marshal? I ain't done nothing wrong. Jubal says, yeah, you have. You came to Waco. We don't like you, your kind, our town. The kid says, my kind. And Jubal says, what behind the ears? Lead pushers, gun sharps.
Lead pushers.
The kid says, you don't even know me, Marshal. Why are you digging your spurs in my belly? And Jubal says, I know your kind, mister. Got me a nose that could smell a polecat a mile away. The kid says, a polecat, huh? He takes a deep breath. Jubal says, that's right. You gun toughs have all a smell about you. But the cold hard fact of the matter is, mister, I ain't got time to gab with you today. So if you come to gun me, you best get on with it. Or get down the road. Which will it be? The kid says, heard you were a hard twist, Stone. Maybe another day in time we'll settle this. Jubal says, why wait? That is unless you yell. I don't cotton to taking lead in the back. The kid says, so you call me a coward and a back shooter? Jubal responds, that's about the long and the short of it, I reckon. Now, you going to pull that shooter or lighter shuck?
You know, you can just see that scene.
Yeah.
You know, because the young man is like across the main drag, main street, and he's
right. Been
on a post, and Jubal just knows.
Well, you know, it's funny with Jubal, with gunfighters, he has a special hate for them because they wreak havoc, they kill people, they come to, and you know, when anybody comes to town, Jubal and his deputies are on them. I mean, they are on them. But one of his strategies, a lot of times with the gunfighters, he knows if he can get them mad and angry, they'll make a mistake.
Yeah.
And that's where he gets the upper hand. Of course, he's got a fast draw. You know, when he pulls his pistol, he shoots from the hip. He doesn't draw it all the way out. He shoots it barrel clear, so he's got a very fast draw. But he actually, that's one of his strategies, is he pokes them, you know, and gets them upset, and then they usually do something stupid. But he knew that boy was young. He didn't want to kill him. He didn't want to shoot him. But he wasn't going to let him shoot him.
Yeah. And Scott, your marshal, Ezra Flint, is somewhat like that too, isn't he? He can smell out somebody that's going to come into town gunning for him, can't he?
Flint has a very strong moral compass. He can smell evil from a mile away.
Yeah. You don't want to come into either of the towns, Misery, Kansas, or Waco, do you? You want to sit there of them if you're going to be up to no good. We're going to take our last little short break, and we're going to step away to tell you about one of the places that you can order the books from many of our author guests. Find them on the Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org. And when we come back, we're going to hear another little piece of music, this one inspired by the life of a lawman. We'll be right back. Don't go away. I hope you're having fun.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
The great Southwest. The marshal and I trailed him for half an hour or more. Then from ambush he opened fire with his .44. The lawman drew his six gun and with speed and accuracy he shot and wounded Billy, saving both him and me. Lawman going on his lonely quest, lawman, riding across the great Southwest. Bill was the man he wanted, his real name John Monroe. He took him back to stand trial down in New Mexico. And to this day the one thing that most impresses me is how he spared the outlaw's life with his speed and accuracy. Lawman, going on his lonely quest. Lawman, riding across the great Southwest.
Oh, I love it.
And we're back. That was the High Country Cowboys, and that was written by one of their members, Marty. And they're a wonderful group. And, as you both kind of learned about me, I read books and music just comes to me. You know, they just go hand in hand.
Excellent choices tonight.
So, Scott, we're going to just switch to you for a few moments because you have, and not only are you the series editor for American 250, but you are a writer, as you say, 5,000 words a day at least. And your newest book came out, what day was it?
Came out this weekend.
Yes.
Came out this weekend. It's already number 22 on Amazon Westerns. So very exciting.
Very
exciting. Hopefully climbing.
And we got it. We thank Nick Whale of DSP. It arrived on our doorstep Monday morning, a surprise. And we've both been digging into it. I have a little more left to read tonight. But the premise is, I think, kind of unusual, Scott. Do you want to talk a little bit about not only Ezra Flint, but kind of what has he gotten himself into with this story?
Well, so this is the ninth of the Ezra Flint series. And Flint is a very self-contained, stoic man. He's something of a philosopher, and he is a gunfighter also, and is a great student of the classic Roman Stoics like Marcus Aurelius, who he's always quoting. And you know, and I'm sure Casey would be the first to tell you, when you're writing series characters, they're usually so infallible that after a while you want to mix things up. So I'm always trying to do something a little different with Flint, and he's kind of different already in that, you know, he's more like a college professor than a marshal, even though he's a gunfighter. And in this, I wanted to give him a crisis of conscience. So Flint is the marshal of a small town in Kansas called Misery, which kind of tells you everything you need to know about the town. And a young kid named David Wilcox is killed by a gunman. Now, Flint wasn't there. Flint had nothing to do with it. It was just something that happened. And Flint goes and tracks down the gunman and wants to take him back to justice. But of course, the gunman's not interested. So Flint's forced to kill him. And he comes back and he goes to the parents of the dead boy and says, I know this is a great tragedy, but I killed the man who murdered your son. And the mother looks at him and says, it's your fault. If you were there, this wouldn't have happened. This is still your fault. Mm-hmm. And Flint has this incredible crisis of conscience. And he always has a very strong sense of who he is, what his place in history is, what his place in society is. And this shakes him to his core. And he seriously considers giving up being a marshal, which is difficult because at the same time, somebody who put away a long time ago, a man named Killer Kane Bendo, escapes from jail with four other gunmen. And Bendo puts a price on Flint's head, $5,000, which is quite a lot of money in the 1880s. So he now has four gunmen after him while he's debating whether he wants to do this anymore. And he decides to go to ground so nobody gets hurt. But his two closest friends, his deputy, P.J. Dunn, and the town doctor, Doc Prouty, decide to go and look for Flint and try to resolve this on themselves. They're completely incapable of doing this. And they're like fish out of water in terms of being lawmen or gunmen. So now Flint has four gunmen after him and his two best friends who are up there with their ears in trouble, all the while not knowing whether he still wants to do this or not. So I just wanted to paint him into as many corners as I could.
Yeah. As you could.
Well, and it makes for a very, yeah, very engaging, yeah, read.
And, oh, thank you.
Yeah, very engaging read. Yeah. And, you know, Doc Prouty, is that right?
Did I get the Doc name Prouty, right? Yeah.
Doc Prouty. He's not a law, you know, he's not a lawman, but he's really a good doctor. And last week we had Manuela Schneider on and we talked about her book, Dr. Goodfellow, which was based on an actual doctor that was in Tombstone and throughout the Southwest. And you have a scene where Doc Prouty is a young man has been stabbed in the back and he's got a lung that's filling with blood. And I thought that was fascinating how he just, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to suck that blood out. I'm going to put this hot, you know. And I thought, oh my gosh, he's like Dr. Goodfellow.
I love Manuela. So Manuela, if you're listening, I adore you. Other than that, everything that Doc Prouty does in the book is what they would have done in the Old West for, yeah, surgical emergency like that. And I have to tell you, you know, I'm as romantic as the next person and I love an idealized past, but when I write Doc Prouty passages about him practicing medicine, I'm very happy to be alive in the 21st
century. Yeah.
Yes,
where I have, you know, running water, flush toilets and antibiotics. Yes. I mean, life it does not get better than it does right now, no matter how much I romanticize.
Well, readers, when you get to this book, there's a scene, and we won't go into it, in a bathtub with Doc Prouty.
In the bathtub, yes.
In the bathtub. And I really, because I knew, you know, you're the author. It could go any which way.
Yes.
And I almost was holding my breath, and I was like, I don't know. I just want to flip. I'm going to just flip forward. But no, you had me so engaged. Of course, I had to read every word and every sentence to know what was going to happen.
By the way, there's a very subtle joke in there, or not too subtle. Two of the gunmen are named, one is named Les Crutchfield, and the other is named John Meston. And those were the two people who wrote Gunsmoke.
Oh, Oh, we love that.
Just almost every one of my books has an Easter egg of some kind. And
that's
one
very fun. That's very fun. Well, and when Prouty was in the bath, he was reading a Buffalo Bill.
Buffalo Bill biography. Oh, yeah, short. Buffalo Bill, was not only a real person, but there were hundreds, I think 600 dime novels about Buffalo Bill. He wrote, I think, about four of them, and the rest were written by, Ned Buntline and Prentice Ingraham and people like that. But there are lots of them, and I got a couple of them myself, and they're great fun.
Yeah, I thought that was fun.
Oh, and I'm writing a biography of Buffalo Bill Cody, which comes out around July from my good friends at the South Dakota Historical Society.
Oh, that's great. That's great. We're going to take just a moment, and then we're going to be back, but we're going to listen to another piece of music. Hope Mr. Sam, our DJ, is listening. We'd love to hear Joni Harms' Heart Behind the Badge. And we'll be right back.
Not everyone can do it. Takes a special kind. Willing to walk the walk. Their life on the line. They bravely take the challenge. Each and every day. Trusting God will keep them safe each step along the way. When the heart behind the badge is made of solid gold, they're not out to be a hero or have their story told. They're just trying to make a difference between right and wrong. The heart behind the badge is still beating strong.
It's a great song. That's a great singer. We've known Joni about 20-some years, and she's just fantastic.
Yeah, we're going to see her in concert next Friday night, in fact. She's a wonderful singer-songwriter. She wrote that as a single about a year ago, I think. She'll be so thrilled to know that we played it tonight. And I thought about both of you as writers. You are also the heart behind the badge. You know, she's singing specifically about the workaday men and women who are that heart. But I think you as writers, any writer that is writing these kinds of characters, you are also the heart behind the badge, aren't you?
I think so. Never thought of it that way. And I appreciate you saying that. We certainly put our heart into it.
Yeah. I try to be the spleen behind the badge.
Oh, of course you do, Scott.
Scott never plays along, does he?
No. He's always game for something a little bit comic. But we said tonight would be a comic and entertaining and informative conversation. And Scott has certainly, these two gentlemen have certainly made it that. So, Jim, why don't you ask your first question that you love to ask?
You know, and particularly with these two books, we have a real cast of characters. You know, do you always have total control on them, or do they surprise you once in a while?
Yeah, Casey, we'll start with you.
Yeah. Well, the characters surprise me because I don't write with an outline. So when I sit down to write, I don't really know where the story's going. So whatever those characters do is new to me as it is to the readers that will read that story. You know, like, what's next? You know, people ask me sometimes, what's next? And I say, I'll let you know when I know. And I'm being serious about that. But they take a life on of themselves. And I love that. It's very moving because I think I know with my Jubal Stone, it's a real life guy. He has a family, but he's also juggling a U.S. Marshal position. And it's really interesting on some of the Amazon reviews that the people that connect with Jubal and his family. I had one lady talking about his son, Monty, little Monty. And she said, I want to hear more about him. Well, that kind of influenced me to involve him more. So there's a lot of that in the upcoming stories as well. And one lady said, the Stones, they're my family now. And I thought, that's so incredible to think about, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And Scott, how about you?
I'm always taken by surprise. I'm a strong plotter because I like to have a plot, and some of mine are fairly intricately plotted, but that changes all the time depending on the people and the people develop as I'm writing it. I mean, so every now and then I'm working on a book and a character sits down and whispers something in my ear, which means I'm either improvising or I'm profoundly psychotic. I don't know. But but yes, it always takes me by surprise. In fact, we were talking before. I had a character that I had planned to be a bad guy named Black Jack Simmons.
Yes.
In a book called Long Trail to Justice. And midway through, I said, I like this man too much for him to be a villain. And somewhere in the middle, I revealed that he was not quite as bad as he was painted to be. And that way I was able to bring him back for another book, Flint's yes. Honor. And the plan was Blackjack was going to be a thorough snake. And by the time I was done with Blackjack, I just adored him so much that he couldn't be all bad and I had to bring him back.
One other quick kind of writing question, and then we're going to find out where people can follow you and such. How do you keep, when you're writing a series, how do you keep it fresh and engaging both for yourself as the writer and for your audience to keep wanting to, you know, binge read of that series? Casey, we'll start with you.
Yeah, for me, traveling, very important. Getting out of the norm, like I said, I go to Wyoming, but I go to different places. I was did a just kind of a personal writer's retreat in Tennessee recently. And so I think getting away, getting out of the routine brings oxygen, you know, and new ideas. And, you know, I write in public a lot of times. I write at home as well, but I find myself more out in public, engaging people, watching them. You know, something there. People are fascinating anyway. You know, just look in the mirror. You know, at yourself. See that. But you look around at people, and the way they talk, the way they walk, the way they carry themselves. And as a writer, you're always looking for those prompts and those ideas to change up your characters, because I want every one of my stories to be different. Uh-huh. You know, not for a reader to say, I think I read this 3 books ago. They just changed the names. I don't ever want that. So traveling, talking to people, reading a lot, researching, because, you know, part of my day too, some of that is research. It's reading.
Yeah.
You know, a little snippet here, a little snippet there, you know.
I'm looking at time. So Scott, I'm not going to.
Very quickly, I would say that people who like series fictions read them because they like the characters. And it's like visiting with someone you like. So I try to make each one different. One's a mystery, one's an adventure story, one's a chase. But the core is I have to keep Ezra Flint compelling, and I want him to be an interesting enough guy that you would visit him. So it's like watching Rendezvous with a Writer. Every week it's different, but I like to see Bobby Jean and Jim. So how do you make him compelling enough, like Bobby Jean and Jim?
That's so nice, Scott. So where can people find you, follow you, and what do you have coming next? And then, Keisha, you're going to answer the same question.
Coming up next, so I was just a guest at the Tucson Festival of Books, and a surprise hit for me was an old book of mine called Hogwild, a Tom Mix book. So DSP is reissuing it with a new intro by Gary Goldstein, and I'm working on another Flint book called Gunfighter's Graveyard.
Oh. All right. And Casey, what have you got coming up next?
Well, this coming week, there's 2 books coming out. One is actually both of them are special, but one is written with my daughter, Wren Nash. She is an up-and-coming writer. I think she's much better than I am. And that is Jackson's Vow. And that's part of the Dove Taylor series. That's one of my newest series, by the way. I have 3 going: Jubalstone, Eutychus Bly, and Dove Taylor. And then also, I have another Jubal solo coming out. It's called Hiding Out in the Hogbacks of Horse Creek. And it actually combines Marshall Jubal Stone of Texas with Marshall Dove Taylor of Wyoming.
Oh.
Jubal is railing his ranch stallion to Buffalo, Wyoming.
Wow.
And the horse is stolen en route, is stolen there in Cheyenne. So Dove Taylor and Jubal come together and they hunt down. And actually, the Hogbacks are at Horse Creek, where I'm going to be visiting. I've seen those mountains so many times, those passes. And another thing I want to quickly say, and that is Custom Westerns. I'm writing Custom Westerns now. We did a big search on this. Nobody's doing this in this genre, but I'm taking people of today, anybody that would say, I wonder what it'd be like to live in 1880s, and I'm going to put them in that setting. And one of my books is The Town with No Tongue, and that has James Reasoner in it, he and his dog. And I'm working on my other one. I was working on Bob Bozbell today, and it's Last Hand for the Gambling Man. So, books rolling out, working on many others.
Okay. Well, thank you, gentlemen, so much. I'm looking at that old clock on the wall, and we are basically out of time, but we want to say thank you both, thank you. And we want to say thank you to Sam Hassan, our DJ tonight, Blue Cottage and Clicks by Madison, and our special guests, both of you, Casey Nash and Scott McRae. Next week, we are going to be away, but we have no worries. Guest host Tom Swearingen, an award-winning poet. He has guest hosted for us before. He does an amazing show. He has a fabulous guest, Chantel Ogden, and she's ready to come on. And then when we come back on the 23rd of April, we'll be talking with Ron Elcom about his book, The Legacy of a Lie. And Jim, did you have a final comment?
Again, thank you, folks. And as we always say, it's a great day out west.
Keep writing.
And we'll keep reading.
And we'll keep reading. And thank you so much for being with us tonight. We'll see you
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.